Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. Glad you're with us today. This is, of course, as you know, Central Coast Voices, and this is Public Radio KCBX. We're glad you're part of the discussion today. The goal of Central Coast Voices is to bring you credible, valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. We want to address today's choices and how they affect tomorrow's community, and frankly, how they affect today's community too, of course. And we want to look at the long-term ramifications for changes and things going on in our society. Action for Healthy Communities is the sponsoring organization of this program, along with KCBX. Action is part of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. Publishes a report every 3 years called Vital Signs, Understanding San Luis Obispo County. Would encourage you to go to the website of www.actionslo.org, where we would like to share with you some things that you might want to know about the county and the community that you live in. Today we get to talk about some things that you will probably not find any information about on the Action Report. Actually, it's something that is in the category of everybody knows it exists and nobody quite understands it, and so we're going to try and help you understand it a little better, and that's robotics. Yes, robotics can be fearing. It can be something we're afraid of. It can be something that we're not sure about. And yes, if we go back far enough, there are those of us who remember that the Jetsons had a robot. And for those of you who don't remember the Jetsons, God bless you for not even knowing who the Jetsons were, because that's probably very, very important. We're going to talk today about robotics. My guests today are Joshua Erdman, and he is the Softech, president of Softech, and a senior consultant with Techtegrity. Sorry about that. And Shane Waddell, and he is the founder of Slow Robotics. And Stuart Morris, who's the vice president of Softech and also director of operations for OpenLine. We are going to talk about robotics today. But one of the things, and I guess this is really important, if you think about the fact that, hey, robotics is something you don't want to know anything about, please don't go away. Because what this program is also about is what we're teaching our kids about technology and what we're teaching our kids about things like robotics and how it will affect society and their life. And so if you find robotics something that's a little bit unusual to think about education, because that's really where we're going with this today. And it should be a fascinating topic. Also want to remind you that as we do every week when we can, this is a call-in program. You can give us a call at 805-781-3875. 781-3875. We would love for you to be part of the discussion, and we would like to really have you give us an idea of what about this is important to you, and maybe some of the things we're talking about that are either bewildering or fascinating by you that we need to talk about in a little more depth. We have robotics programs at schools, and these guys today are going to talk about, to some extent, what we're doing with that and how we're not doing enough. And I guess that's my editorial comment, that there's probably always more we can do, because all you have to do is go to one small local or regional conference or competition with high school robotics, and you will generally not find a single unenthusiastic kid in the room. And that becomes really what this is all about. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. Who wants to jump in first and tell me where we are in robotics and why you think this is something we should be talking about?
Oh, I'd love to talk about that.
Okay.
So first of all, I think what we should talk about is where we're not in robotics. For those people that do remember the Jetsons and Rosie the Robot, robots are not intelligent.
I didn't remember the name of their robots. Rosie, okay. I'm sorry you remember that.
So robots do not have an intelligence. They're not able to know what we're thinking or anticipate our needs, and certainly don't have the ability to do multiple different types of tasks. When you see robotics out in the industry, whether that's on the assembly line at a production plant, they are doing something very specific, mounting rims on a car. When you look at the robotics in education, the robotics competitions, they are designed for a specific competition that was designed for that year. When you go to Bed Bath & Body, or
Bath & Beyond.
Bed Bath & Beyond.
Or Best Buy and you look at the robots there. You have the iRobot Roomba, and all it does is vacuum. So robots are very specific with what they can do.
Okay. I want to take that in a direction that maybe not where you were going with this, but as I was looking at the information that, you all provided for us and to look at this, it occurred to me that a lot of the technology, the physical technology, is not that different over the last 30 years. But the computer support that makes it work is. Most of what, if you take a Roomba apart, I would say that the motors that control it and such, you could probably find somewhere, maybe not in something you could afford, but you might find similar motors and similar technology in something from 40 years ago.
Correct.
But you didn't have a Roomba 40 years ago, so something in technology has changed over the last 30 or 40 years that's made more of this stuff viable. My Erector set might have been able to build a Roomba if I tried real hard in 1966. But the software or the computer controlling stuff to make that whatever I built work probably wasn't there.
Definitely. Computing and the internet itself, the power, the computing, now that we have, you know, all the strong computing power and the internet making it available for you to buy those parts and source and find those parts. I have a lot of people say, "How do I, where do I find this?" And simply Googling for those motors that you do find that are definitely almost the same as they were 40 years ago. But now you can control those with computing. So, and you can buy them, you can find them versus flipping through catalogs that maybe are out of date. Now you can actually look for that stuff and get it and build your own. Make your Erector set, like you said, make it do something for you. So, absolutely.
Okay. Because I think of, there's a company that used to be in San Luis Obispo, it's not here anymore, called Zeotech. Okay, Zeotech built computers that controlled industrial robotics. And Bert Forbes, who started that company, who I had a conversation with a number of years ago, said the things that they control with their computers, or did control with their computers when the company was still around, were not that new, but the ability to control them and program it was mostly what was new.
Yeah, the actuators and servos and even the sensors, there's some pretty new technology in sensors for like sensing light or sensing gases and things like that that are kind of new that you wouldn't have found 40 years ago. But definitely the actuation parts, the servo stepper motors have been around for a long time. You'll find those in 3D printers. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. They've been around forever. But intelligent control, computational control of those, that's definitely the new part within the last 10 to 15 years that's really taken off. And a lot of that has also contributed to, again, the internet and bringing us all together, the geeks, the nerds, together to be able to provide this physical computing technology where we get in there, we do programming, and we have these pins, these wires that can turn on and off and make those motors move forward and backwards and actuate or do sensing.
Okay. Yeah. By the way, that was Shane just speaking. We had Josh before, and I'm sorry that I didn't make sure that was real clear, so we'll get to Stuart in a second. But I want to get back to Josh for a second about part of this. There's an awful lot of people who believe that which they don't know and that which may become very efficient is going to threaten their life or their safety. We still, it's like everybody, okay, 2001 Space Oddity. We had HAL, okay, that was the computer that pretty much took over control of everything.
Artificial intelligence,
okay. That seems to be the kind of stuff that we have a lot of fear about. I guess people don't seem to be fearful of the concept of having a Google self-driving car, even though it might hit them. They seem more fearful about some decision that the equipment might make to go after them because it has more intelligence than we thought it did. So who wants to jump in how we address this problem?
I'll jump in.
Okay.
Josh, is it good?
Yeah, please.
Well, I think, movies are made to sell movies, of course, right? And therefore they sensationalize things. And it's great, and I love watching the big battling robot movies and whatnot. And so that's part of the fear of it, right? That they'll hunt us down. And we're also afraid of things that we don't understand, you know. So that's perfectly natural. And I really do feel that in the future, robots will help us, whether it's robotic surgery, driving our cars, absolutely. But, of course, there will always be either maluse or malfunction. And with any benefit will come some cons. I think, though, It's overblown within entertainment, and for the purpose of entertainment, it's put forth as like they're going to take our, you know, hunt us down, or that goes to the other side of the spectrum. They're going to take our jobs, things like that. And I don't think that's what we'll see. I think we'll see the benefits, just like the internet has benefited us and computers have benefited us. So I think that's where it'll go.
There's two practical applications where I'm seeing robotics used now, neither of which has a strong level of intelligence. We see it already with the vacuuming robot. We see it in military applications, and when everyone hears that, they might think drones. But we're all seeing that in a marriage of wearing a sort of like an assistant's suit. When you're in the military and you are jogging with a full pack, here you are. You probably weigh a little over 200 pounds. You're very fit, and you have over 100 pounds on your back, and that blows out knees really quick. So in this marriage of understanding how a body is built and attaching an intelligent robot that has the exact same shape, it actually carries the majority of the load. And that's one of the things that they are testing now. It's not intelligence. It's not making the decisions. It is sensing the movement of the person who's wearing it, and it is taking the load of the weight of that backpack that they're carrying, preserving improving the quality of life of that soldier after they retire.
Good point. Stuart, why don't we have you jump in? What brought us to this discussion today really was SoftTech, which is an interesting nonprofit in the community, and maybe we need to chat about what brings the three of you together with relation to SoftTech, and maybe that will give us a better understanding of how this is tied to our local education.
Sure, thanks. Well, SoftTech has been around. We're coming up on our 20th year for next year, so we're going to have a big celebration for technology here on the Central Coast. We're a nonprofit, as you rightly so, and we promote and facilitate the growth of the technology industry here on the Central Coast. What we do is we are like an umbrella or an octopus of, in the community, each company has some sort of technology base to it, whether that is the network, whether that is the computers that are running their business. There are people behind the scenes. Those individuals, men, women, old and young, they need an outlet to connect with others, like-minded folks, whether they have an interest in robotics, as Shane does, or high school education, like I do. We provide, SoftTech provides events and dinners throughout the county to allow us to come together. We bring up different topics depending on what's going on this year. We brought in Women in Technology last year, a huge success because we wanted to recognize the women in their technology fields on the Central Coast. Since that time, we have actually created a group that meet, they have breakfast together once a month, and they're able to now network themselves and becomes a stronger part of our community.
Yeah, it's the second Tuesday of every month over at Whole Foods, 8 a.m.
Excellent.
Okay. Good point. Let's come back to this in a second. I want to remind folks we're talking about robotics and SoftTech and technology and education. And if you want to be part of this discussion, we'd like you to join it. This is Public Radio KCBX. This is Central Coast Voices. And if you're listening, that means you have a voice, too, in this topic if you'd like. The phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. We'd like you to be part of the discussion. We generally think a lot that this is tied to either people like the three of you who work in technology all the time, or students, okay, and that seems to be the groups that. I was down in Pasadena for a wedding last year, and the hotel I was staying in had gotten taken over by some regional robotics conference, and it was fascinating. But it was obviously, 99% junior high school and high school kids and their parents. And it was people who were already involved in the technology. In this case, as students. In the case of you folks, it's people who work in it. It's part of your livelihood or just what you – it's not your hobby. One of the things that you put on is some conferences through the STEAM program, and we'll talk about some of what that involves in a little bit. But I want to specifically make sure we don't forget this, and that is that this coming Monday, the 28th, at the Elks Lodge in San Luis Obispo from 6 to 8 p.m., you're doing a student robotics expo. And I want to make it real. The reason why I prefaced it the way I did was I want to make it really clear. This is not designed just for students, just for educators, or people who are already involved in this technology. This is an evening so you can learn more about it if you're on the fringe, if you will. Can you tell me about what you guys are going to do there?
Sure. This is an outstanding program to bring yourself and your grandchildren. Mm-hmm. It is a non-threatening environment. You know, there's going to be kids kind of running around and robots, but they're going to be confined to spaces, so they will not run you over. This year, we're excited for lots of different reasons, but one of the missions of SoftTech is to give back to the high schools. And so over the course of years, we've given $32,000 to high school robotics who do not get funded. This money wouldn't have come from anywhere else except for it came from our community to our kids. I've been fortunate to be on two separate high school teams. My son was on I was the mentor and the driver, and driving these kids all over from San Francisco to LA. But the piece about the SoftTech, the Robotics Expo on Monday, is it gives an opportunity to see what's possible for younger than high schoolers, and giving this perspective on people who are outside of college, outside of their careers. But now they can look back and say, this is interesting. I want to know what's coming next. This would be for you. This year we're bringing our levels back up, as in stepping it up. We have not only underwater robots that'll be in the pool. We have a SoftTech board member who is scuba certified, and she will be down in the water taking photos for us. So that's awesome. This year we set up a drone course. Now I know that has a lot of people skittish, but these are small, maneuverable, basically flying helicopters. And we are going to put them through a course. It's going to be confined yet again. And it's going to be a contest of skill, not necessarily speed. And so we'll be running that. And then indoors, we're going to have several high school teams, up to 10 high school teams with varying sizes of robots. And then we also have elementary schools from LucyMR that will be there with smaller robots. So there's going to be a lot to see and do. As well as the bomb squad from the sheriff's department will be there with their bomb robot. So robots can help us. Hopefully they don't get called out.
I'm glad you clarified that a little more. It's like, why is the bomb squad going to be at a robotics expo?
Yeah, when he drives up the last couple of years, it's fairly impressive machine that he brings out. So it's exciting for the kids to see. It's exciting for the public to be there. We're excited this year.
Yeah, our hope is to put together a multi-generational event. The elementary school kids will see what can happen as they go further in their education to high school. We want to have hobbyists there. So we have a commercial area for commercial robotics, and that also includes 3D printers. It's a fixed robot that, you know, squirts plastic and builds something out of it all on its own. That's pretty amazing. And then we also have hobbyists that, you know, like Shane, who's going to have a table with his robots as well. So there'll be something for everything, for everyone. And, you know, SoftTech and the types of events that we're putting together aren't just for the person who is an innovator of technology and their job isn't just technology. It's for the technological curious. We have a monthly Tech Brew, and what we do is we have these events that are sort of a TED Talk style where we have presenters – present to us various, just anything that's interesting. If you are curious about what the inside of your microwave looks like, you want to take the skin off of it, I'm sure we'll have one of those eventually. We had one that someone presented a 3D printer one time, and we did one on lasers. So there's been a huge variety of events that not only we create on our own, but also events that we promote of other organizations as well. And the goal really is just to create community exposure and awareness.
Yeah. As all three of you have spoken, it occurred to me we haven't defined what a robot is, and I want to get back to that in a second, but we have a caller, so let me make sure we grab this. Is it Maria? Is that correct?
Yes.
Hi, Maria. What are your thoughts or questions?
I guess my questions involve things regarding 3D printing and medical technology. I was wondering if you knew anything about that and if that actually applied to robotics.
Yeah, very much so. As a matter of fact, at one of our tech brews, we had a series of technology and medicine. And one of the presenters, his name is Michael Balzer. He is the owner of a company called Slow 3D Creators. Yeah, that's their website as well, slow3dcreators.com. And he presented on 3D printers. It was really amazing to see this printer make things. But he had a story. And his wife, she was suffering from some headaches. And after getting some multiple like MRIs, which is a 2D technology, they found that inside her skull, she had a growth on her bone right above her left eye. And the surgeon was deciding how they were going to go about this, and it involved them opening her skull up. And since she's a patient, and through laws, you have access to all your patient data, him and his wife grabbed all the data, and he found out that it was in a normal format through open source computer software. He could convert it into a computer model and print it out in 3D.
Oh, my
so
goodness.
At our event, he showed us this skull, a human-sized skull, and it was plastic, and we could all hold it. And he had it where you could pop it open into two halves, and you could look in the half that had the bone growth and see it in exactly the shape it was. He shipped that overnight to the surgeon, and when the surgeon saw this in a renderable format that he could tangibly hold in his hands and see what he was going to do, it completely changed his approach. He realized that he didn't have to go and do a very invasive surgery opening up the skull. He was able to go right above her eyeball, and her recovery was extremely fast.
Wow.
She had
sorry.
Yeah, turn your radio down, please. Yeah, go ahead.
No scarring because it was in the fold of the eyelid instead. So it was a great example. We're seeing 3D printers also in the rapid development technology of dentistry. When orthodontist.
Okay.
When you're getting some, if you have to get some type of surgery or have teeth made for you or a significant appliance, they have to ship that off because there's special chemicals and plastics and materials to have that be able to be in your mouth and work well. But what would be terrible is for them to have it made, you show up a month later and have it not fit properly. Mm-hmm. Because of 3D printing, they can build what they think needs to be created, have it print, give it to you within an hour. You can fit it in your mouth, and if it fits well, then they can send it off and have the original one made.
Fascinating, yeah.
Also,
And the cost of this, is that substantial, or what is going on with the cost as far as 3D printing goes?
Well, it's coming down rapidly as more and more companies see that there's benefits and profit to be made there. You'll see Dremel just put
the
one
competition.
Out. Yeah, there's competition, and it's going to drive it down. HP, I think, is working on one for the home.
Hey, Backup, you said Dremel. So the company that makes the small little, basically hand-drilling apparatus that you can have for crafting.
At Home Depot, just a few months ago, they had a primary display, and it was like $900, but it was super high quality. And, of course, you can get the knockoffs online really cheap. Also, one thing to talk about as far as in the medical, I also help out at the Slow Makerspace here in town, and over the summer we had a student come in with a summer project, and there's an open source build community out there for if you need a prosthetic arm or hand, especially for kids, they'll assign the kid to a student or someone that has a 3D printer, a community through this website. And she was able to print off this really nice prosthetic hand with some moving parts and ship it off to this kid that otherwise would just have, you know, a bare bones kind of, you know, hook type thing. And it's in different colors, whatever the kid wants. And so this is like open source meets open community who has the printer, and it's really going to make a difference in our medical day-to-day, I think.
Maria, I think that probably covered your question pretty well, huh?
Thank you. Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. Very informative.
Thanks for calling.
It.
Keep listening. This really brings up an important topic, because one of the things I think when we look at technology over the last 30 years, it's not so much in a lot of cases that the technology to do the things you're talking about didn't exist 30 years ago. It's that it didn't exist at a cost that anybody could think about playing with it. An example I've used before is that if you go out and buy a reasonably simple laser printer now that prints only in black, you can buy one for about $60, a good, reliable one for $60. The first one that I bought, I think technically it would be 22 years ago, I bought my first laser printer. It was $1,000, and that technology was pretty much the same. But the difference was that I could barely afford it, and I'm still surprised I bought the first one at that price. But technology that's available to people to begin to tinker with, because not that it's disposable, but that it's accessible in a manner that's not a great strain on one's budget to try things with. I was very surprised to see one of my grandchildren for a birthday present got a small drone. It's not even a helicopter. So it's a quadcopter that was for sale. I believe it came from Costco for about $22. I was really shocked because 20 years ago, the battery that went in that thing would have cost you twice as much as the drone did. So from the direction you're going in, I think we're talking about whether or not the ability for kids that have some real skills and imagination to try stuff that's not going to cost a lot of money. And I say not cost a lot of money in that it becomes accessible for the kids to be involved with.
And we have, some of the technology we have to thank for this kind of stuff actually is 3D printers itself. When you look at the cost of, the Roomba robot, that's expensive. And there's not, when they first came out, they weren't purchased by the boatload. So if you have an idea, but not that many people are going to get, buy that product, the research and development to put it together correctly, have it manufactured in mass, and have it be perfect the first time for everyone to buy it is extremely expensive. But with 3D printers, you can have an idea, and now with technology, render it in on a computer screen where you can try out all the test parts in software on a screen, then have it printed out and try it out as if it was manufactured, and adjust for the majority of any of the types of problems you might run into before you take these parts, send it to a production facility and have them make 100,000 only to find out that it doesn't work, or maybe it's slightly too big and people don't like an iRobot vacuum that's the size of a trash can lid. They would want one smaller. So with 3D printing and the ability of, CAD, it's called computer-aided design, those two things together allows us to do what's called rapid prototyping. And it's those things that have really sped up us seeing new robotics coming out to market.
I realized as we started, we probably should have started the program with this, and I apologize we didn't. Can anybody give me a clear definition of what is a robot and therefore what isn't a robot? My laser printer is probably not a robot, okay? My car might be a robot if it would drive itself.
I would go so far as to say possibly even a hand drill. I mean, it performs a function. You push a button, you give it input, it takes some sort of energy, and it performs an action for you, right? So, but that's very rudimentary. It doesn't have any decision making capabilities that you've programmed in. There's no software really in most drills, right? So, I have found in running a lot of robotics groups that is a very wide definition. Most people don't like the hand drill one. They want it to be more exotic, to have at least a computer in it, right, and some actuators and some sensors. So, I'm curious as to what others here.
Yeah,
think.
I go so far as to say that 3D printers, regular inkjet printers, those are robots.
Yep.
It's a robot moving a piece of ink back and forth, squirting the ink on paper, and then sliding the paper along as it prints.
It's doing a job for you.
A high-end sewing machine, a serger, has a digital input on the side of it, and it allows you to select and put material in, and then it goes.
And upload a pattern.
And upload a pattern.
Okay. An example, not for argument's sake, but it may sound like that. A two-slice toaster, okay? I set it to basically toast at a certain level, okay? I set it to take the bread. I push the button down so the bread goes in it. And then it decides when the bread is toasted enough based upon what I programmed it in, and it delivers the bread back to me. Can we call that a robot?
Sure.
Hey, guys, jump in here. Go ahead. Okay.
You set it. You program it. You tell what temperature.
Okay.
You have inputs. You push it down as well, right?
Okay, yeah.
And then it has an action. It's just so focused, such a narrow focus. It does one task and one task only, and therefore it's kind of hard. Well, is that really a robot? But it does take input. It processes something for you, right? It processes your bread.
I think we're in the gray area
between robot and machine.
A toaster and a drill are machines.
Okay.
I would say anything that is programmable where you could have it work differently through code is the transition between machine and robot.
There's nothing fun about the toaster. People don't want to come to a robotics expo
and
see a toaster. You know what I mean? Right?
So robots have to be fun.
And do something more than one task, I would say. Yeah. One specific task, although printing, 3D printing, you know.
Let me remind you, if you haven't noticed, we're talking about robotics. This is Central Coast Voices. I've got some fascinating folks in the room with me. You're welcome to give us a call and talk about this. We had a wonderful call about from a listener talking about robotics with regard to medical science and medical technology, and that was fascinating to talk about. The phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. If you haven't noticed, this is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. You may be listening at 90.1 or any number of repeater frequencies we have over the Central Coast. We're glad you're with us today. This has become a fascinating topic, which means I need to get into one of the things that I had outlined that we haven't got to yet, and that was that one of the three of you in your notes about what we should talk about referred to robotics as a sport. So who sent that to me in the notes, and who wants to jump into that?
Oh, I'm guilty.
Okay. Go ahead.
2 weeks ago, SoftTech at our board meeting discussed about what is the next thing that we're going to do. We've been sponsoring student robotics for over 11 years. This is our 7th annual robotics expo to get the students together, to see have the public see what's going on. Running a robotics team is expensive. Budgets go between $40,000 and $60,000.
These are high schools or middle schools?
High schools, okay. $40,000 and $60,000 for the parts and also for the traveling to the competition. Stuart himself, you know, he said he was one of the parents driving.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah. Some of the small teams have a smaller budget, you know, maybe a $3,000 to $5,000. But when you take 30 or 40 students several hundred miles and you stay overnight, that's when the costs go to that $40,000 to $60,000. Mm-hmm. And then if they do well, they will travel across the United States to compete as champions. We've had a Tascadero be champions in their first league, and Slow High and Napomo High are on a smaller scale robots, and they've done incredibly well. And they have less budget, but they still do not receive money from the school or the school district or from the state. And that's where Josh will take it over for the first.
So we've been supporting these teams, and our goal when we first started 11 years ago was to get robotics teams in almost every high school and start seeing it going in elementary schools. And we've seen that happen. In many ways, we could hang our hat and say, well, we've set out what we've accomplished. Let's move on to the next big thing. But in realizing how much cost is needed and the resources for this, we decided to double down. And what we decided as an organization is to push for robotics being recognized as a sport. As a sport, you get access to not only just financial funds and, you know, within a school, those resources, but you can use the school bus. That helps significantly in logistics and moving a whole team. And, robotics, I think, translates very good as a sport. Some people are calling it a mind sport. One of the things that makes it, it's points-based. There's teams and positions on those teams. It's a competition. It's also a spectator sport. If anyone's seen some of the robot wars on TV, it fits spectators. And you have equipment and budgets necessary to do it all. It fits a sport in every way.
And if you consider, like, take baseball as a analogy to this, right, is comparable, right? It's a competition. And by way of the player's abilities to put the bat and the ball into motion, they create outcomes that we call the game of baseball, right? The same can be true with robotics as a competition. The players that will put the servos and the circuit boards and the programming code all into motion to create an outcome, a game that we can call the sport of robotics and robotics competitions. So it's definitely a teamwork. It totally fits.
Okay. We'll get back and revisit that in a minute, but we have some calls I want to make sure we get to. Dick, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go right ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I have a grandson who has the privilege of having cerebral palsy problems, and I feel that robotics probably has the greatest capability of aiding him in his future. He's 10 years old now, and within the next 10 or so years, it would seem to me that maybe exoskeletal work with robotic responses might be something that would aid him in the fact of his atrophied muscles, or perhaps even the robotic use to treat his cerebellum in such a way that he might regain his own use of his limbs. He's not severely what would you call it, accursed with this particular disease, but he's sufficient that it would be really to his benefit. So what do you think about those? What's the progress so far in that area?
Your idea is an exciting application for robotics. What we're seeing today that would be very similar to what you would imagine for your grandson is already in the areas of surgery. We're using robots and a surgeon together to perform surgeries at the cellular level. When you're trying to stitch together a nerve endings, those are very small. And humans, we can't move smaller than half a millimeter easily. So what we do is we can use a robot, and then a surgeon can take effectively a joystick and make larger movements and through magnification and you looking at a computer screen, see what's actually happening at the other end with a robot making those very specific minor movements. So that's an example of a robot translating human movement to something that is more accurate and clean. Built into that whole system at the same time is detection for things like hiccups and sneezes. So if you're a robot, if you're the surgeon and you all of a sudden have a sneeze, the robot can detect that and shut down. And I would see just being able to take that type of technology and extend it to something exactly what you're describing.
Okay.
Interesting. And about exoskeletons, what do you think about that? I think they already have those. I know they applied them to some military that was mentioned earlier in the program.
Yeah, there are many exoskeletons through the military as well as they're coming into commercial use. TED Talk has done several vignettes on exoskeletons, and they are becoming more user-friendly. And as technology and time goes by, I think they will be very much used for the public.
Anyway, Dick, thanks for your call.
And the price will come down, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, yeah, actually, we've talked about that. As more things become in the marketplace and more usable, price does drop quite a bit. Thanks for the call, Dick. So we've got a call from Alan. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm
okay.
here.
Thanks for your patience. What are your questions?
Well, first of all, I want to say a compliment to host. Because had he not said that this might interest people who are not just interested in robotics, but in our children and so forth, and that kept me listening.
Good to hear. Thank you.
Pardon me?
I said that's very nice to hear. Thank you very much.
Sure. Yeah. But the time lapse is getting me from the radio in
corner. Turn your radio down, and then you can just listen.
Can you hold for 2 seconds while I go grab it?
Yeah, go ahead and grab it turn the radio down. That would be great. We'll get back to when Alan gets back here in just a second. One of the things I want to make sure that we do talk about is what people who may not have school-age children or may have really no interest in robotics from a technology standpoint can do. Okay, Alan, you're back. Go ahead.
I know better than that because I had a show there. Okay. I had a couple of shows there on KCBX, actually. But anyway, so my radio voice is probably familiar to some people. Anyway, I think, and you may have covered this, and I may have missed it, the definition of robot and robotics seems to have jumped from one area to another. And the example that I have is my youngest boy, when he was much younger, he and I found this show on TV called Robot Wars or Wrestling or Mash Each Other Up. And it's a show that comes out of San Francisco. And I was attracted to it because I knew the landscape from there. And they call it robotics, but it looks to me like somebody is controlling them, and this control makes them more remote than robotics, I think. And so I wanted a definition or at least an explanation of what is and what isn't robotics. Now, that show doesn't seem to me to be actually robots because they don't do anything for themselves. They're controlled. From outside this fight area.
Yeah. Autonomous control. Yeah. Shane wants to jump in the conversation here, so hold on a second.
Alan, that's a great question, and I know what you're talking about. You're talking about BattleBots up in the Bay Area, and there's also RoboGames, and I've been up there and a part of both of those, just moving here recently to SLO last year from the Bay Area. So, and you're absolutely right. They are remote controlled. They are not. They are still robots, but they are not AI. They are not thinking for themselves. Now, there is some caveats to that, is that those robots that are out there fighting in those arenas, they can't have sensors on them to say sense that automatically when they're close to their competitor, they can launch their weapon or perform a maneuver, which is, you know, done automatically. But truly, they are robots, but they are not robots making decisions for themselves. They have your standard radio control for your RC plane or a Wi-Fi connection and things as such. But I would still call them robots. They're just... they're off-bot processing. They're human-based intelligent, not artificial-based intelligent. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, that answers it pretty much. But the again, the bigger question is of the, you know, overall cover for the word robot. Evidently, that covers a lot more territory than just something that's autonomic.
Well, the old definitions for computers used to even go back to, say, what is it, the abacus, right? I mean, you've heard that. And some of the old printing presses or looms were considered to be the first computers. It takes a wide sweep. And it's kind of a good thing because then it encompasses lots of people that get interested, even like the toaster. That might get someone at home looking at their toaster going, well, this thing does more than just I got to think about this thing a bit. Let me look at it. And that's that, at least that's my hope with him being really broad about it, is that it might encourage people to kind of start tinkering with things, is the theory.
Alan, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. One of the things that we put out there is questions that we pose to you before you come on the program, so we have an understanding of our topic a little more fully, because, frankly, I know very little about robotics, and a lot of topics I know nothing about, so it's helpful to get a lot of information. One of the questions we put out there is what kind of questions you get about the things that go on. There was a question I think you've somewhat addressed, and that was that people's concern about whether or not robots will take their jobs away or what robots will do as far as get involved in our lives too much. But one of you sent me a note that said there are different questions that come from hobbyists, and I can't leave this one alone, because the question was, do you know Ardeon or Ardeon?
Arduino.
Okay. And what about the Raspberry Pi? So, guys, I'm sorry. That may be real trite stuff when we finally get it out there, but I had to ask because it was just too strange to let go by.
Yeah, that was me. Thanks, Fred. So from general public, usually it's more based off the movies and whatnot. Will they take our jobs or attack us type things? With some interest in, say, like the vacuuming robot. But from hobbyists and people that are into technology a bit, and there's a lot more people getting into technology as their jobs, they commonly hear of the Arduino, which is a very small footprint computer called physical computing. And that's what it is in most robots. Or the Raspberry Pi. So that's what I have started the Slow Robotics Group here in town and started one in San Jose as well as San Diego when I was there. And usually that's when they come in, well, have you heard of – and it's always the Arduino. It's such as me talking to you. If I was into radio, I might say, have you heard of this certain type of microphone that's really popular? I don't know. I can't give an example. But that's the first relating point where they try to relate. You know, people try to relate because I'm kind of into this hobby. I want to get to know more. Or the Raspberry Pi, which is the next step up, and it's really just a small computer, kind of like our cell phones are. Okay. So.
It's spelled PI, though, like 3.141.
Yeah, okay. Did I have something else there? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Let me talk about the will robotics take our jobs.
Okay. Yeah. That's good because that's probably a good place to take this.
That is not the case. When you look at robots, robots aren't taking people's employed jobs that you're paid. They're taking our tasks that we don't want. We have no one drives a stick shift anymore. No one wants to shift.
No, wait a second.
So very few. The market is massive.
My wife has never owned an automatic shift car, and she will never.
I miss shifting. Bless her. I miss shifting, but when you look at society, that was a task people don't want to do. They have a robot now do it, and it's an automatic transmission. People don't want a vacuum, so they buy an iRobot to take care of that task. So are robots taking our jobs? No, but they are taking the tasks that we don't
want. They're changing the jobs, too. I mean, look at all the people now that go out there and create these iRobot employees, several. And, you know, automatic transmission technicians and whatnot. So I truly believe our jobs will just change and they'll get to be more assisted, just like the surgeon thing you're talking about. That surgeons aren't going to go away. They're just going to do their job better. Cars aren't going to go away. It's going to be that the less people get hurt or injured, you know, because they don't have to drive. They don't have to shift anymore. Now they don't even have to drive. They can be spending more time with their kids, and they can actually be texting and still be safe, right? You know,
right. And that's one of the reasons that SoftTech is interested in elementary and high school students learning new skills. This is think of, you know, 100 years ago where everybody was on a farm and the Industrial Revolution became, you know, more and more factories. So people were trained in factories. Well, we are now at the point where we as a society, and we need to give our kids and our grandkids skill sets that take them into the 21st and, you know, beyond. And that is one of the reasons where we're so interested, is because we want to look forward, but we also want to make sure that individuals are taking care of their families and understand this technology so that they can help the previous generation and the next generation.
So that's one of the reasons I assume that you've set this up as a nonprofit. It's a 501c3, so it's a tax-deductible organization for doing that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Why don't we give out the websites? Because, among other things, the website, people get information about the event coming up on the 28th, a place that they can get information about supporting or contributing to the growth of this. And we can get more into the schools in a couple of minutes, too. But absolutely. What's the website?
Softtech.org, SOFTEC.org.
Okay.
And if you go to that website, there's a link right at the top of the front page that says robotics. You can click that and see more about the event. Okay. On that page, it also talks about the drone obstacle course that we're having. So if you have a drone, bring it. If you want to see what a drone looks like up close, come by. That's where these robots, these drones you know, they have cameras mounted to them, so you get some amazing photos with some of these drones as well. And at the same time, at this event, we are giving away SoftTech has earmarked $6,000 to invest in high school robotics. And with the help of Norcast, and they are also a big sponsor of the event. And at the drone obstacle course, they'll have this Norcast landing pad for people to, you know, race their, yeah, their drones through. That'll be fun. And what we're looking for is some matching donations as well. If you go to the SoftTech website, SOFTEC.org, and go on the robotics page, there's a place for donations, and you can help match this. Whatever money comes in is going to go straight to the high school robots as well. SoftTech is a 501c6, so it's not tax deductible. However, what we are also doing is membership's free. You can go to the SoftTech website, put your email address there, and learn about these events, the robotics expos, the tech brews, the dinners that we have, and also get emails of other events that aren't put on by SoftTech but are that we promote to make sure, just to bring community awareness. And so membership is free, but then we are run from sponsors. The whole board, myself and Stuart included, are volunteer boards, so we have day jobs, and then we have our meetings at night, and we run from sponsors. So Norcast is a sponsor, MindBody Online is a sponsor, Madonna Inn's a sponsor. We have systems. There's a lot of technology companies as well. Techtegrity is a sponsor, and so is Open Online. And we really appreciate our sponsors, and we're always looking for more sponsors as well.
Okay, I want to make sure we don't make sure this gets another opportunity. The schools are supportive, but the schools don't have enough money to do as much as you want. So you're finding high schools and, to a lesser extent, junior high schools are supporting the efforts to build robotics teams. It's just a matter of whether or not they can have the funds to do it.
Correct. Right now, I think the biggest thing is resources, not only dollar resources, but also human resources. So the current shift is robotics are clubs. That means they meet after school. So you need to have a faculty member be there after school and spend time upwards between 4 and 5 hours a day throughout the school week. So that adds resources to them. And they don't get a stipend. It's a club. So that's where we're really feeling like we want to do that. I was a tennis coach, and I got a stipend because it was a sport. My players rode a bus and traveled. Clubs don't have any of those available to them. Mm-hmm. And so our big push, and there's a couple of states. One is Texas and one is Minnesota. And they have decided that they will recognize high school robotics as a sport so that you can letter at it and you're able to they have like 6 periods a day. Well, one period is sports. Mm-hmm. Well, they include that as your PE, I guess, or your sport. So that is really the paradigm shift that we're looking for. And we're really trying to figure out from the educational side, from the assembly and state individuals who are working in Sacramento on our behalf, that's where we need to get their attention and try to figure out how we do that. California, Silicon Valley, and San Diego, LA, these are major technology hubs, and they should have a voice in this. The other piece that just hit home last week is we had a football player severely injured. Mm-hmm. Robotics, yes, there can be injuries, but you're looking at taking some of the physical abuse of our bodies and using our minds to produce things in a long-term manner. There's only 1% of high school football players make it to the pros. Well, a robotics student will have a lifelong career in that field if he or she chooses.
I'm surprised it's not a class more often because, debate, which is I classify it as not the same thing, but there's a class for debate. Mm-hmm. You're in the debate or public speaking class.
In Lompoc High School, actually, they have a underwater robotics class. And instead of having a club team, they did that to help students meet their science requirement for graduation. Mm-hmm. Kids didn't want to take high school physics, when they're leaving. And I got to be a judge of that last year. It was really fun to see these robots where these kids were tackling the problem assigned to them in completely different ways. And one of the questions that we were asking them is well, has this changed you as a person? Some people, they didn't. They just wanted their credit. Mm. But there are some people that never touched technology before, and these two girls were looking at me, and they were saying, I can see myself going into into underwater biology, or their career and their focus for the future just completely changed from the experience.
We're down to just a couple of minutes left here, and so I want to Shane, you see your parting shot at us here.
Yeah, thanks, Fred. Let's see here. So Slow Robotics was started about a year ago as a move from San Jose, and I found there was kind of a very much an interest here in Slow for electronics and robotics, right? And so one of the primary goals we have is actually working with the community and creating a robotics meetup. And we already have a very successful robotics meetup that's going on every Wednesday night. sometimes at the Slow Maker Space. So you can check slowrobotics.com or meetup.com for the meetup. And so if you're not in school and you're an interested adult that is hobbying in it, and something you brought up about people that were never interested in robotics or technology before, Josh, well, we had one guy that came that was just a welder. He'd always done welding. Well, we need mechanical. There's a mechanical input, right? Mechanical engineering, welding, that all has to happen in robotics. And so now he's got himself an Arduino, and he's going down that path as well. So we're also going to be creating a robotics meetup for kids as well, for youth. That'll be happening here soon. So it'll be outside of the schools. And one of our other focus is actually working with the schools and providing them input or volunteering for them to teach the teachers. I've already done a couple classes where I teach the teachers. Arduino is one of them, and going out there and working with them to get robotics into their school.
Yeah, I won't mispronounce that again. I'm sorry. I
didn't know what Arduino. That was the king of Italy. That's where the name comes from.
Oh, interesting.
Because it's from Italy. Yeah.
Okay. Alrighty, Josh, you get the last word.
Oh, thank you.
Actually, sort of the last word. I get the last word, but go ahead anyway. Okay. You got about a minute or something.
Softek is a nonprofit organization. We'd love people to get involved. The organization exists to promote technology. We are the proof. When politicians say that Softek, that the Central Coast is tech friendly, we're the proof of that. And so when it comes to making education better for our kids, we're certainly focused on that and could use anyone's help. Become a member, also sponsor if you can, and help us work to push robotics as a sport.
Oh, and let's not forget, because we'll get into this too real quickly, and that is next Monday on the 28th from 6 to 8 p.m. It's a free event that people don't need to sign up for in advance. You can get information at softtech.org, S-O-F-T-E-C.org, or just show up at the San Luis Obispo Elks Lodge on Elks Lane between 6 and 8. Is it a finite time or is it a drop-in environment? So if I can't get there at 6, people can come during those 2 hours and life will be grand.
Yeah, it's a drop-in environment. You come for the robots, stay for the drones.
Okay. Interesting logo. Okay, anyway. Thanks, gentlemen, thank you very much. This has been a fascinating topic, and thank you to our listeners and callers today. I want to remind you, if you haven't noticed, this is Central Coast Voices, and I'm your host, Fred Monroe. I'm glad we could be with you today. We're a production of Action for Healthy Communities, which is a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. Next week, Chris Kington Barker will be here. She'll be speaking with the executive director and program director of Reins of Hope, and that's H-O-P-E, which stands for Human Opportunity Partnering with Equines. And they're going to talk about a fascinating program that's coming up, a fascinating program that's ongoing. It is basically equine assistance psychotherapy, working with at-risk youth, families, and veterans, and they're doing some fascinating things. Chris is going to be joined by, as I said, their executive director and their program director. It should be a fascinating program. Please, that'll be next Thursday. I'll be back with you in 2 weeks. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action, as I told you, and we're doing this project in collaboration with KCBX. We thank them for their support and providing the airways, and you as listeners of public radio help that come about. This program is also underwritten through a grant by Joan Gillard Sargent, and we thank her support. If you want to share information about future programs or this program, you can email us at voices@kcbx.org. or call us at 543-2323. Thank you to our listeners and our supporters. As I said, this has been Central Coast Voices, and thank you to Joshua, Shane, and Stuart today. It's been a wonderful program to share with you. Next up is This American Life, one of my very favorite programs. And thank you, and we'll be with you next week at the same time.